This is the Toronto Today podcast. I'm your host, Greg Brady.
We're talking decriminalization of drugs and cautionary tale, I think, with what happened in British Columbia, with what could potentially happen in Toronto. Now, here's two big news items that one's pretty new this morning. One is the federal government and Health Canada fired back towards Toronto, and I would assume their chief medical officer of health, Eileen Davila, she was making the rounds yesterday trying to make the case for decriminalization here. And they asked a bunch of follow-up questions, and Toronto hasn't responded. So you got to do your homework if you're going there. Remember as well, and to the prime minister's credit, he's made this point, any kind of consideration for Toronto really needs the green light from the province of Ontario. And I think at this point, the premier's Doug Ford, last time I checked, he's not going to give that. Also, in the Globe and Mail this morning, Vincent Lam's an addiction medicine physician and has written a novel about the opioid crisis. And I thought this was a really interesting part of his op-ed in the Globe and Mail. BC is articulating what healthy engagement looks like. We want all citizens, including people who use drugs, to engage with public spaces such as parks and restaurants in keeping with community norms. My patients who are trying to avoid using drugs tell me it's challenging if they encounter drugs in public because it triggers them. This is the biggest thing with, we really don't allow alcohol anywhere and everywhere. And I can only imagine if you're fighting a terrible affliction like alcoholism, guess what you can avoid? Bars, restaurant, you can. It's not, no, not ideal, but eventually you'd be avoiding the old watering holes for a while. You'd be avoiding restaurants. Maybe you're not going to a Blue Jays game where they're going to be selling beer everywhere. You do what you have to do. But if there's illicit drugs everywhere in public spaces and you're addicted to illicit drugs, again, another unintended consequence we hadn't thought of. Someone who's written extensively on this, and he's the founder and director of Center of Responsible for Responsible Drug Policy, and he was with us last week before jetting off to Israel, no less, is Adam Szivo. Adam, good morning. Thanks for being on the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
All right. So BC did what you and I said they'll likely do last week, and they made that ask. Ottawa approved it. Any element of surprise that the federal government really reacted fast and didn't try and fight what British Columbia wants now, and that's to recriminalize?
Honestly, I'm not entirely surprised, but I don't think that the federal government should be given credit for making this move. So essentially, the BC government actually dragged its feet when it came to pulling back on decriminalization. They tried to basically recriminalize drugs using provincial law last autumn, and then there was a court injunction which prevented them from doing so, and that was granted in January. And they could have, at that time, used the notwithstanding clause or asked the federal government to step in to recriminalize drugs, but they didn't, right? So for several months, the status quo continued, which was untenable. People felt unsafe. And they only moved when they saw polling data showing that the BC Conservatives were surging in support and had a good chance of actually winning the October election. And so that was the reason why, from my perspective, BC asked the federal government to step in. Now, the federal government hummed and hawed, kind of said, well, we're not sure what we're going to do. We're going to review the data. And then they moved very abruptly. I believe yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think what's very telling here is that a second poll showed the BC Conservatives' sort of gain in the numbers here. And that showed that the BC Conservatives are even surging even farther. So I would assume that at this point, the federal government is responding to political pressure on the ground rather than taking any leadership role when it comes to addiction policy.
Wouldn't be the first time, would it? And especially with healthcare, Adam, that a government has either responded to polling or the potential for an election covering up. You can imagine being here in Ontario, and you know the province well, every party drives me mad with what they say about healthcare because I think they're simply trying to not just appeal to their base, but they're also trying to, you know, find some politically homeless stragglers to be on their side. But none of it really benefits the public at the end of the day. Will this policy benefit the public in BC and their cities?
Well, I think that decriminalization is an obvious failure. It hasn't reduced overdoses. It hasn't reduced deaths. All it has done is caused an explosion in public disorder, and which is why you see such a huge public backlash, and that the scope of that public backlash really cannot be understated, or rather overstated, which is why the BC-NDP made a complete 180. We have to keep in mind that all the people who lead the BC-NDP government and all of their advisors are really gung-ho on drug decriminalization. And so for them to change course shows that something went really, really wrong. Now, as you know, Dr. Lam had mentioned, you know, some of the unintended consequences really weren't reviewed when implementing this policy. Yeah. One of which is that if you're in recovery, you're trying to get away from drugs, it's very triggering for you if you see drugs everywhere. And it's surprising no one thought about that earlier.
Adam Szivo is our guest on Toronto Today on 640 Toronto. Now, I don't foresee somebody smoking crack on a park bench and being hauled off in handcuffs, never to be seen from again, and being put through some lengthy, expensive criminal trial. But I'm going to guess that what this allows law enforcement to do is to say, they're going to take your drugs. And that's the biggest thing, I think, right now. They're going to kick you out of a Tim Hortons. They're going to come onto the subway and stop you from using there, right in front of kids and old people. Like, I know this sounds like we're being moralists, but societies have to have an element of moralism to them.
Well, that's the thing. I hate the term moralist. There's nothing overly moralizing about asking people not to smoke crack on the subway. This right. is the space that other people need to use. I think that it's totally fine to tell people that you shouldn't, you know, inject heroin by a playground. We have to balance different community groups and their interests. And unfortunately, over the past few years, we really indulged and enabled drug users at the expense of everyone else. And it's just too extreme. Now, that doesn't mean we should dehumanize drug users. They are people who are sick, who are struggling. They deserve help too. But at the same time, we have to set healthy boundaries.
But is it your guess as well that the decriminalization or the recriminalization of this is not going to lead to arrests? It's not going to lead to people in prison or going to trial, will it?
Well, I mean, once again, it's hard to say. I don't think it will. And I think the devil's in the details and which jurisdiction you're talking about. I don't think BC has any intention of jailing drug users en masse. What it looks like, and you know what the provincial law, which was stymied by a court injunction, essentially looked like, was confiscating people's drugs and using fines to yeah. coerce them, which is a much gentler approach than jailing people.
What do you think this means for Toronto and their potential plans? And I mentioned probably as you were on hold, you heard right now Health Canada has fired back to the city of Toronto and said, you got to give us a lot more details about what you want to do. They haven't, which tells me maybe Toronto is going to abandon this at some point, given what a disaster this was in British Columbia.
Well, I think that the Toronto decriminalization pilot project, which never got off the ground, is effectively dead. And the fact is that the health bureaucrats who want this, they're never going to change their mind because they're ideological, they're not evidence-based. Their goal is drug legalization, and they'll do whatever they need to do to achieve that. But it's politically impossible for them to get there, for them to achieve that at this point, because they need the buy-in from the provincial government for this to work. That's what, you know, Yara Sachs, the Minister of Mental Health and Addiction at the federal level, said. And the Ford government doesn't want to do this. And it's very likely that we'll have a new conservative federal government in about a year and a bit. And there's no way that a Poilievre government is going to allow decriminalization to happen. So I think for at least the next 5 years, drugs are going to stay illegal in Toronto, hopefully.
Let me ask you, I got about a minute here, but I look and I know the depth of your knowledge on this and looking at politics, the left and especially the left center, the moderates, they've got to figure this out, Adam. They may be on the wrong side of this issue when it comes to either less deaths or more deaths. But I also know that they're on the wrong side based on what the public views as being acceptable. How much don't they just have to get together, figure this out and create better alternatives? Or you're just going to see conservative governments left, right and center rule the day. Like these are not popular policies with members of the public who vote.
Well, I mean, this is the Achilles heel of the political left is, you know, essentially enabling drug use everywhere. I think Canada's political left needs to understand that, yes, the war on drugs failed in the 70s, 80s and 90s. But what we're doing right now is not helpful either. We've swung way too far on the other end. It is possible to define a third path, which is empathetic, but at the same time, respect surrounding communities. And the onus is on them to find that.
Adam, really appreciate you being on. Thanks so much for making the time for our show.
Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Today podcast. We drop the highlights of the daily show every weekday morning at 11 a.m. Don't forget, you can hear the entire show on the radio, at home, on your smart speaker. Ask Alexa or say, hey, Google, play 640 Toronto or Toronto Today. You can hear us on between 5:30 and 9 weekdays on 640 Toronto. Have a great day.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.